This is John Lash recording on the 23rd of July, 2015. And this is the parable of the extras. This is the third parable in the five parables that come under the category of Mayavada Vedanta instruction. And I've explained in a talk the introduction to dog paddle in white water, or somewhere in a recent posting. I can't follow details so well anymore. Details escape me. You can consider that to be an effect, a consequence or a side effect, if you will, of the fact that I am living and operating about 90% of the time in the liminal state, as my Lakota friend calls it. And she is correct in using that term. In any case, I've explained that these five parables can and most certainly will alter your NLP. They are tools as well as stories. And each one of them, in its own way, is based on a theme of duality or substitution. So now we come to the third of the parables. The first was the parable of the two trains. The second was the parable of the two oxen. In that case, I simply uploaded a recording of a conversation I made a year and a half ago. So that comes warts and all. And it's not a recent finished product of my delivery. The third instance is the parable of the extras. And it goes like this. The setting of this parable is important. In fact, you can put yourself in the setting, and I would advise that you do that. The setting is a town, not a large or small town, not a village, but say a town of 50,000 people or so. That was the population of Santa Fe, New Mexico, when I arrived there in 1972. And this town is a lovely little place where people can mingle and where quite a few people know each other. It not being a big city, it doesn't encourage everyone to isolate and to ignore others who are strangers. On the contrary, there's more of a tendency for people to know each other and to be amiable in social situations. So in the cafes and restaurants, the gas station, the coffee store, the pizza joint, the place where you buy auto parts, well, people sort of know each other, and in some cases they do. They do, and they're friends. And they associate. So this is the ambience of the hometown setting for the parable of the extras. You know, come to think of it, what I am describing gives a picture, accurate picture, of what Santa Fe, New Mexico was like way back then. And yet, you can imagine it in any way you like. You could imagine the town to be a seaside town with bars and cafes along the boardwalk and a little harbor with some boats. You know, perhaps a town like Penzance in Cornwall in the northwest of England, or any other similar kind of seaside town where people sort of all know and recognize each other, where you recognize people and even if you don't know their names. And then there are a few people, maybe, that you don't recognize at all, because it is not a village, after all. So picture this ambience, get a feeling of this ambience, be it Santa Fe, New Mexico, or Penzance. And then consider this. Word goes around in such a town, no one knows exactly sometimes where the word originates. But word goes around that there is a film crew from out of town visiting and looking around. There are some people from the film business, the movie business in town, and the rumor has it that they are, quote, scouting locations. And this is a business term for the advance team that comes into any village or town or city or location where a movie or scenes from a movie are to be filmed. Well, this is pretty interesting. Let's say that this is maybe the first time this has happened in this town. People are intrigued and excited. And little by little, the talk grows, and it comes to light that, yes, indeed, the film company, the production company, was coming to town at a certain date. And on one particular day, they're going to film a scene in this town. And it becomes interesting and exciting as the locals learn that some of the locals, maybe yourself, could have a role as an extra in this film. Now, an extra, well, everyone knows what an extra is. But in case you don't know, it's just a person who occurs in a scene as background. For instance, if there is a scene of two people talking in the back seat of a cab, maybe a 30-second scene in a movie, and the camera sees the driver of the cab, or if one of the actors says to the driver of the cab, take us to the train station, and the driver of the cab looks over his shoulder at the moment that the actor says that and then looks ahead and puts the car in gear, that's an extra. Usually extras don't do anything that contributes significantly to the action of the film. In this case of the taxi driver, well, you could say the extra marginally contributes to the action of the film. But generally the extras are just there standing around to populate the scene. Well, how exciting. News is going around our hometown that some of us could be hired to be extras for the scene, just one scene, that is due to be shot somewhere in the town. Now, from this point on, events develop quite rapidly. There's an announcement made, public announcement, to various media of the date when the scene will be shot. Now, you know, to film a scene in a movie is very complicated, and sometimes to get only 10 seconds of final footage on the screen, or 20 seconds, could take hours, and that costs money. And it's the role of the production team to set up situations where scenes are shot, scenes are to be shot. And so it turns out that we, the locals in the town, learn that there is a particular day. Let's say that day was January 12th. It's a day that kind of sticks in my mind. And on that day, the scene will be shot. But at the same time that word goes around town about the date, the location is also disclosed. The production company has made arrangements on that day to occupy a cafe on the corner of a small square. And the arrangements are such that traffic will be controlled in and out of the square without too much trouble. People can walk across the square as usual. And the intention of the director and the producers is to film this scene in the cafe at a table. The two main characters of the film, the man and the woman, will be sitting at a table in the cafe, sort of on the edge. Let's say that the cafe is open so that you can sit outside on the sidewalk, or you can sit just inside the cafe at a table, but you can have the window entirely open so you can look out on the square. That's where the scene, the writers, the script writers, have placed the two stars of the film for this scene. Finally, now that the date of the shoot is determined and the location is secured by various agreements between the producers and the cafe owner and the city officials and the traffic control cops and whatever is required, then the notice goes out hiring extras for this scene. All right, so we're the locals of the town. We hear about all this, and this is something that locals could know because it comes to our attention, either through gossip, through rumor, through conversation, word of mouth, or it may come to our attention through an article in the local newspaper, or it may come to our attention through a poster that is on an office that is temporarily rented by the company, and it is in that office that they receive people who would like to be hired on for the day as extras. And suppose that you and I are standing there in front of that little temporary office, and we're reading the announcement, and this is what we read. The filming will be on January 12th from 2 to 5 in the afternoon at this location, the cafe on the corner. We'll call it the Corner Cafe. And that's all we know. That's all the locals know. Now, if you go and sign up to be an extra and they say, fine, we'll pay you $150, 150 British pounds, whatever, to just sit at this cafe all day from 3 to 5, and off and on during those, from 2 to 5, and off and on during those 3 hours, the director will indicate action and the film will be shot and you will be in the film as an extra. This is all you know, and this is all you need to know to be an extra. Correct? Now, as I recount this parable, I'm using the storytelling ability that I have as a human animal. I'm using what you could call the narrative skill, the narrative gift, which belongs to the anthropos. We are storytelling animals. At the same time, I'm engaging your storytelling ability, because to listen to a story and to tell a story both involve the same narrative talent. Now, I ask you to do something that often occurs in a narrative process, in a storytelling process, and that is to change the perspective. You know, a film, a feature-length film of an hour and 40 minutes, can occur, can be shown to you in different perspectives through the eyes of different characters, right? So far, I've been relating the parable through the perspective of the locals in the hometown. But with the information I've given so far, with the story details and the development of the plot, as it were, the narration arrives at the point where the locals don't know anymore. For instance, the locals don't even know what is the name of this film. Well, who would know that? Well, the production company, and primarily the screenwriter, the director, and the actors. So, of course, the entire production company would know the title of the film they're working on, but let's just say, for the purposes of the parable, that the writer and director are the same person, and the two principal stars, man and woman, collaborated with the writer-director, so they gave the film its title. Once they gave the film its title, everyone involved in production, from the key grip to the person catering to the actors for lunch to the cosmetics and makeup people, everybody knows the title of the film because it comes from these three people. So where the title originates is important. And let's say that the title of this film, let's say that the three people, the writer-director and the two stars who are close friends, are calling this film The Gnostic Love Triangle. And it's a romantic thriller. As I narrate the parable, it is only in the perspective of those three originators of the story, as it were, that the title is known, because the title comes from them. But eventually, of course, it may get out that the title is known to some of the extras as well, but not necessarily. One thing you need to bear in mind about being an extra is that an extra can sit at a bar in a scene and end up having 1 second or 2 seconds on screen as one of the actors walks by the extra sitting at the bar. And the extra doesn't need to know anything about the movie to be an extra, right? But the extras may learn a little bit here and there. They may hear of it. You know, they may hear a title. They may hear the Gnostic Love Triangle. They may hear the word Gnosticism or the word mysteries or the word Sophia, you know. And so they may hear those kind of things, but they certainly don't know what those things mean in the way that the originators and creators of the film do, right? It's a difference of perspective. Now I'll ask you to stay with me for a moment, a little longer, in the perspective of the film creators. Let's say here is a man, he's the screenwriter, and he's going to direct the film. I believe this is called the auteur, A-U-T-E-U-R. Woody Allen was a very famous auteur in that he wrote and directed his own films. Ingmar Bergman was also one. Sometimes the auteur acts in the film as well, but auteur means write and direct. So there's the auteur and the two principal stars, man and woman. So there are two men and one woman at the source of this film, and they are close, close friends. They've known each other for many years, and they have collaborated on this film from the beginning. So even though the screenplay, even though the auteur is the principal author of the screenplay, 142 pages, which is 222 minutes, 2 hours and 22 minutes, excuse me, long film. Even though the auteur wrote the screenplay, the two main stars collaborated in the story and worked with him at every point along the way to develop the plot, thereby scripting largely their own roles. And so these three individuals have control of the film from the creative point of view. From their perspective, they are the only ones who know the complete plot of the film. Remember, a film is shot in scenes. I'll give you a formula that you might enjoy. It's what I call the formula of the four S's. Whenever you watch a film, you can always be sure that at every moment of the film, as it's unfolding before your eyes, you are seeing four things at once. First of all, you're seeing the story unfold, the overall story. That's the first S. Then you're seeing a sequence of action within the story, which can consist of a number of scenes. A sequence of action is a number of scenes stitched together. Second S. Then there are the individual scenes, third S. And then there are the shots within those individual scenes, fourth S. And a shot, by the way, is the amount of time that the camera is on the action without cutting. So you can count shots, and generally in films today, shots are very brief. But the further you go back into films, if you go look at a film like The Maltese Falcon, you'll find that there are very, very long shots. And some directors today specialize in doing long shots that run to 10, 20 minutes and so forth. There was a film called Birdman recently that consisted of two shots broken in the middle of the movie. Two shots, each of which was like 30, 40 minutes long. Story, sequence, scene, and shot. The three creators of the film are the only ones who know beforehand all of the elements comprised in those four factors. They know the entire story because they created the story and they're acting in it. They know the sequences in the film because the auteur has established them in the screenplay. They know the particular scenes that they will act in, where they will appear, for instance, sitting at the cafe table, at the corner cafe, having a conversation. And they know how it will be shot, or the director at least determines how that scene will be shot. The angle of the camera, will they be shown first at a distance from across the plaza? The first shot, say, is from across the plaza. And then the camera moves in on them and comes in on them and picks up their conversation. And then the cut and the next shot is in the cafe itself with the extras in the background and the two principal actors having a conversation at the table. This is narration. And the power of narration, I just might add, for the pleasure of a comment, is indeed a great, great power commanded by the human animal. And it belongs to the inherent genius of the human species. Power of narration is one aspect of the non plus ultra. You could say that it's the masculine pole. So anyway, the scene to be filmed in the cafe, the scene to be shot during these 3 hours, only runs 2.5 pages in the screenplay. The rule of a screenplay is each page is 1 minute of screen time. So, 2.5 minutes of footage is the takeaway intended for the day of filming at the Corner Cafe. And the producers and organizers of the film have arranged for a 3-hour window in which they will shoot those 2.5 minutes. So they might shoot 10 minutes, and then it might be edited down to the desired 2.5 minutes. They might reshoot a scene. They might reshoot part of the conversation. It might be shot from different angles. There are all kinds of possibilities. But bear in mind, and I emphasize again, that it is only the three people, the core creators of the film, who would know the entire plot of the story, beginning, middle, and end, and who would therefore have the sense of how the film is to be broken into sequences, then into scenes, and how it is to be shot. And they know, the extras who are going to be in the scene don't know, don't need to know, but the two principal actors who will be sitting at the table know something crucial. They know that this conversation of 2.5 minutes represents a turning point in the film called the Gnostic Love Triangle. Technically, the term for this moment is called the recognition moment. And the term goes all the way back to Greek tragedy and to Oedipus, for instance, who recognized that he had had sexual intercourse with his own mother. The recognition motif comes from Greek tragedy. And it was defined by Aristotle in his discourse, in his book that he wrote on Greek drama. The recognition theme in a Gnostic, the recognition moment in a Gnostic love triangle is a key moment in the film. So let's say we're going to place it at the apex of the film. So if the film is 140 minutes long, then that's 2 times 70 minutes. The midpoint is 70, and generally there's a story arc that peaks at the midpoint. So let's say that the creators know that the scene to be filmed in the corner cafe, with the extras hired from the town, occurs at the 70th minute. It takes 2.5 minutes, and it discloses, or uses exposition, as the screenwriting term goes. It uses exposition to show a crucial development in the entire plot of the film. And the extras who will be in that scene know nothing whatsoever of any of this, nor are they told, nor are they required to know. So that is how the film event of that day, the shoot on January 12th, looks to the creators of the film. Now we come to the day. It's 2 o'clock, and all the extras who've been hired, let's say there are 40 extras, take their places in the cafe. But who are these extras? Well, consider that the extras who have been hired for the scene to be shot in the cafe are regular clients of the cafe. So in fact, they're just doing what they would ordinarily do. They're stopping by for coffee and pie. They're sitting at the bar and having a conversation with the person behind the bar. Which conversation, by the way, is not heard in the scene, but only shown. An extra is an extra as long as he or she has no speaking part. Anyone who has a speaking part, and this is all technical and legally determined in films, anyone who has a speaking part, no matter how small, is not an extra and has to be named in the credits, you see. But the extras are not named in the credits. So let's just say, for the sake of the narration, there are various ways that this parable can be told. And I invite you to consider variations of the parable once you have taken it firmly and clearly into your mind. But let's just say, in the most simple presentation of the parable, that the 40 extras who will be on screen in this film, in this scene, are actually people who have frequently visited this cafe, and they know each other, and they are habitual clients of the cafe. Maybe they even have particular tables that they sit at, and they can go and sit at those same tables by agreement with the production crew and act just like they would act in an ordinary day at the corner cafe when no movie is being shot. This is the parable of the extras. The parable raises some questions, doesn't it? The narration runs through your mind like a thread, as if the thread had knots on it. And each time one of the little knots snags in your mind, the narration, the course of the story, raises questions, doesn't it? One of the questions that comes to mind certainly is this. If I am an extra in this film, sitting at the end of the bar, drinking alone a glass of white wine, as I habitually do in the corner cafe, then what is the difference between me doing that in an ordinary afternoon and me doing that on this afternoon when a movie is being shot in the cafe? What is the difference? Other questions come to mind, but as I say, take the entire parable into your mind first, secure it in your mind, and then you can consider the variations and the diverse questions that may arise in the course of contemplating this parable. So let's return to the day of shooting. The extras come in. There are 40 of them. You may be among them. They are seated at the various tables, and they could all be seated exactly as they would be in a day when the film, when no film was being made. Outside, just in front of the open space facing the plaza, there could be an elderly lady who walks her poodle past the cafe each afternoon, and she could walk her poodle and be paid $150 or whatever for being an extra who walks her poodle, as she does every day. So all the extras are in place. And according to the parameters of this narration, if you will, they are all silent extras. None of them has a speaking role. They just give character and ambience to the scene. This is a crucial scene, remember. The male and female protagonists, or the lovers of the Gnostic love triangle, are seated at the table having an intimate conversation. And in the course of this conversation, 2 minutes and 10 seconds of screen time, a decisive and crucial event regarding the plot of the story is unfolded. It reveals itself in a recognition event. They both have, both stars have part of the answer to a riddle that comes out of the Gnostic body of teachings. There is a riddle in this Gnostic body of teachings, which in this story appears in the opening scene as a rare manuscript discovered by a mutual friend of the couple who later has to go into hiding. And when he goes into hiding for some unknown reason, because he has discovered this Gnostic manuscript, the two friends who are the stars, he is the, what you call, supporting actor. The two main actors are very concerned that he's disappeared. They're concerned for his well-being, and certain events come to light that cause them to know that not people who don't have his best intentions in mind are seeking him, and his life is probably in danger, and they don't know why. But they each carry a piece of the puzzle of the significance of the Gnostic manuscript discovered by their friend. And in this crucial scene, those two pieces come together. Then they know what is the danger, why their friend is in danger, and the story begins to unfold toward its outcome from that moment on. But only the creator of the story and the actors know this. They have the entire picture from the opening scene of the film where their friend is seen in some kind of underground place, taking this manuscript out of an old chest. He's discovered a treasure in some basement, in some castle in Europe. And that's the opening scene. And they know from the opening scene, they know the significance and the movement and development of every scene in every sequence that tells the story. And the director determines how those scenes will be shot for the greatest dramatic effect. Okay, so to bring this parable around to the turning point, to use a narrative term, let's consider that the day of the shoot goes well. Between 2 and 5, there are a number of takes. The conversation, the decisive conversation, is recorded in a way and shot in a way that is engaging, is riveting. There's suspense, there's surprise at the disclosure or recognition. And the scene serves its purpose. It adds momentum to the film at the apex of the story arc, as it's called. And therefore the rest of the film unfolds dramatically, strategically, from the moment of this scene. Extremely decisive scene in a film. And you can watch films, and generally you'll find there is such a scene at the midpoint of the film, scene or event. All this happens, the production crew, the lighting, the sound crew, the script girl who helps with continuity. All of these people are in the cafe, along with the extras, who are sitting there just as they would even if no film were being shot. In fact, their role as extras depends on them to be certainly oblivious to the fact that they're being filmed, right? And to be as natural as possible. 5 o'clock arrives, the director's satisfied, the actors are happy, satisfied that they've played the role as they wish. They've got the film now. It has to be edited, of course. There's more work. But the film has been shot. The day is over. And the film crew and the actors leave the cafe. And what happens to the extras? Well, they've already been paid in advance. They do it by giving you cash in an envelope. And they can do whatever they like. They are not obliged to go along with the plot of this film. They are not obliged to participate in either the making of the film or even to participate in knowing what the film is about. Some of them might go home and say, oh, yeah, I earned $150 today. Just sitting over at the corner cafe like I always do. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, what was it about? I don't know. Some film. It's called The Gnostic Love Triangle. Some thriller or romantic film. I don't know anything about it. End of story. So the extras either hang around the cafe a little longer, or they all go home and they come back the next time they come back in the ordinary course of affairs when no film is being shot. Now hold that image for a minute, the completion of the shooting day. And now I ask you to rewind. Let's rewind back to 2 o'clock. And let's look more closely at how the scene in the corner cafe has been set up by the filmmakers. There are people at various tables. There are some cars in front of the cafe, perhaps, a little traffic on the street, and there are people walking around in the plaza in the distance. They don't even have to know that they're extras or even know that a film is being made, depending on how the shooting is controlled, right? Many interesting variations here. But let's just suppose that the filmmakers, particularly the three creators of the film, have set up the scene in the corner cafe in such a way that there is a particular individual sitting at the table closest to the couple, one table away. Now this individual, let's say it's a young girl, maybe in her early 20s, and she's sitting there as she would in any other day of the week, perhaps. Perhaps she's a regular customer of the cafe who happens to be hired on as an extra. Because I'm proposing in the narration device, purely in the narration device, that this extra is somehow different than the others, well, let's give her a name. Let's call her, Miranda. Her name is Miranda, and she's a regular customer at the corner cafe. She's about 22 years old. She has long, brown, naturally curly hair with honey highlights in it. She has lovely hazel green eyes, and she has a kind of elfin, witchy look, kind of like the face of a Manara girl, that kind of face. So she's obviously a pretty young girl. She has a tattoo down her right arm of a beautiful rose with big thorns on it. and above that rose is a star. So she's quite a distinctive character in the cafe. The other people are dressed in various ways. They're young, they're old. Perhaps there's a man there with his son, a young son. All kinds of people, as would occur in the ordinary world. But the narration brings your attention to Miranda, as you would say, as the author would say, the screenwriter would say, giving a directorial note in the screenplay. The camera sees Miranda. And what does it see? Well, she's sitting at the table right next door to the two stars. And she has a Mac sitting there. She brings her Mac along to the cafe because there's free Wi-Fi. But she also likes to write in a journal. So she's ordered a drink. She has it in front of her. Her Mac is closed, but it's sitting there on the table. And she's studiously writing in her journal, which is exactly what she does every time she comes and spends an hour or two in the afternoon at the corner cafe. This is Miranda, the extra. So shooting begins. They have to get the lighting right. A lot of things have to happen. A collaboration and coordination of many elements have to happen before the director calls action. And they shoot the scene. Let's say it is one sequence in the corner cafe of 2 minutes and 10 seconds. And let's say that it is three shots. And let's say the first shot is shot from across the plaza. You can see them at the cafe table. They're small. And then the camera moves in. It closes in on them. And as it does, you see the striking figure of young Miranda sitting at the table beside them. And what you notice is that Miranda is within earshot of their conversation. She's really within earshot. That is to say, as she's sitting there without any lines, writing in her journal and sipping her wine, she can actually hear the dialogue of the two principal stars of the film. Now, what happens when the director calls action? The cameras roll. After the establishing shot from outside that places the stars at the cafe table with Miranda at the table beside them, there's a cut. And there's another shot of a close-up of the stars talking with Miranda the extra in the background, placed within range to hear their conversation. The shooting proceeds through the afternoon. Perhaps the director and the actors confer, because the director is there, the auteur. Miranda, by the way, notices who the director is because she sees the director consulting with the actor on how that scene, that decisive scene, is to be played, right? And perhaps they do their lines once, but let's just say they do their lines several times. The director wants it shot several times, and the actors exhibit different emotions playing the scene. Well, Miranda gets the opportunity not only to hear the decisive dialogue, which in effect carries the entire plot, not just once, but she gets to hear it several times as she's sitting there casually writing in her journal. She's not putting her hands over her ears. She overhears the actors speaking their lines just as she would overhear any conversation of a couple at a table close to her table. Now, the parable of the extras asks you to consider what happens to Miranda as she hears this dialogue. She knows nothing of the story. She may only know, as other extras do, that it's called a Gnostic love triangle. She might not know what the word Gnostic means. Let's say she doesn't even know the title. But she hears a conversation, the dialogue between the two stars. And she hears it one, two, maybe four times, because the director reshoots that scene four times. The director and the actors, remember, created this movie. They want to deliver this movie with excellence, with the highest dramatic definition and power. And so they work together carefully to shoot this scene and play this scene to the best of their ability. Doing so, Miranda has the opportunity to hear the dialogue several times. And what happens in the mind of this extra, who is the only one in the cafe who hears the dialogue? What happens in her mind? Well, in a way, you could say that the parable of the extras ends right here. It could end right here, if nothing happens in her mind. She hears the actors say some lines. She doesn't really pay attention. She's concentrating on being as natural as she can, so that she doesn't look awkward in her role as extra. And she's actually writing something in her journal about somebody she knows or something she wants to do, and she's not really concentrating on what is said. The parable of the extras ends depending on what happens in Miranda's mind, depending on what she pays attention to. But let's say that the parable continues to its conclusion. And this is how I conclude the parable of the extras. As Miranda sits there, next to the two stars of the film, and listens to the dialogue between them, something catches her attention. She hears some sentences. She hears some things that the actors say. Remember, it's a crucial recognition scene. And actually, she's startled, because what they say somehow registers in her mind as something, well, first of all, quite interesting. Who knows? Perhaps extremely interesting. Yeah, what they say sounds amazing to her. She's just hearing a fragment of the dialogue of the whole film. But it catches her attention. It sounds amazing what they're talking about. And she's intrigued. And so she listens very closely to the second shot, the third shot. And each time she listens, she becomes more and more aware, although she can't explain how, that she, Miranda the extra, is somehow involved in the plot of this movie. At least the plot reaches her. It reaches her, and it invites her to be involved. And who knows, perhaps she's writing something in her journal. She's been keeping a journal for several weeks. And just at the moment when she's sitting there writing in her journal as usual, so that she can appear to be natural and not give herself away as a paid extra, what she writes in her journal, something she writes, intersects precisely with something in the dialogue between the two stars of the movie. And so it turns out that the dialogue registers in an extraordinary way in Miranda's mind, because she realizes that, in a sense, although she doesn't know how, and it's very difficult to conceptualize, but she realizes that in some sense, she is part of the plot of the movie. Well, that's an extraordinary realization for an extra, isn't it? Remember that I said that the filmmakers hire extras without them being required, or you could say obligated, to know anything about the film. It's not necessary. But what if it so happens that one of the extras becomes clued to the plot of the film, which is the unique creation of the director and the two stars? And she is riveted, attracted, fascinated, and irresistibly drawn to the actors and director. In the course of the day, the film is shot, there are breaks, and everyone kind of mills around. And then at the end of the shooting, let's say it's been a good day, and they complete the shooting by 4:30 rather than 5. They have the footage that they need. The light people come in, they start to move out the lighting, the sound people. Everyone in the team that collaborates to produce this film does their role, does their job. And the extras are not obliged to leave. They can stay in the cafe all night if they want to. It's the place where they usually hang out. But once again, consider this extra, Miranda. Now, she gets up from the table. She picks up her Mac. She puts it in her bag. She has her notebook in her hand. And she's standing there. And right over there, say, at a doorway to a room off the main cafe restaurant, she sees the actor standing there talking to the director. Everyone is kind of mingling. Crew people are moving in and out. As I say, some people are removing the lighting. The whole action, the whole realm of actions that you can easily imagine on a film set. And there's Miranda standing there. And the creators of this film are only 30 feet away. And so suppose that she's a brave girl and she decides, why the hell not? I think I'll go up to them and say something. So she, the extra, seeks out the filmmakers. She seeks out the creators of the story of which she heard 2 minutes and 10 seconds of dialogue. And in so overhearing that dialogue, she may find that her entire life is about to change. So Miranda goes up to the actors and the director, and it so happens that they look at her and they don't turn away or tell her to don't bother us, but they're receptive to her. Who knows? Maybe they saw some kind of star quality in her, because she is, after all, a young woman of stunning beauty with the look and allure of a Manara girl. And who knows, maybe in production she got to be placed beside the table of the two principal actors because of some intuitive feeling that that's where she belonged. So they look at this young woman, approaches them, with the long rose tattoo with thorns, crowned by a star, on her right shoulder. And they smile, and they have a little time, they're willing to engage in a conversation with them. So what does Miranda, the exceptional extra, because she is the only one who heard the dialogue and because the dialogue reached her in some particular way, what does Miranda say to them? Well, the best thing to say in that situation is the truth. I heard this plot, I heard these lines, I'm sorry to bother you and I don't want to intrude, I don't really know anything about this movie, but I was totally amazed because what you're talking about in the dialogue is something that I was writing about in my journal. I even used the same expression. Here, look, the same expression that comes up in the dialogue, it was in my journal. And as I listened to you for the third or fourth time, I thought to myself, Miranda says to the actors and the director, crazy as it may sound, but I feel like I'm involved in this story. I'm not saying I'm involved in your movie or anything, and I don't want to, you know, presume anything, but the story, it's about the story. And the actors nod to each other and they look at Miranda and they say, and the female actor says, yes, Miranda, it's all about the story. And so they talk a little bit more, and to her surprise, perhaps because they see some star quality in this girl, a potential actress, maybe a potential screenwriter, or perhaps simply because they like her, or both, the female star says, listen, you know, we're not leaving town tonight. We're taking a little break. We're actually going to be in town overnight. And we three are going to be having dinner at this hotel. Do you know that over there? It's the best hotel in town. Why don't you come and join us? Have dinner with us. So Miranda goes to dinner with the three filmmakers. And they talk about the story. And they tell her more about the story, which is not an opportunity that goes to all extras. And as they do so, Miranda herself brings her own mind more and more to engagement with these people. It happens very fast and very rapidly. She comes to realize that in a way, she's been waiting her whole life to hear this story and to know the people who are at the origin of this story. And lo and behold, well, life itself gives her that opportunity. Is that an opportunity that life itself gives to all extras walking around on this planet? That's a good question. Or does life itself, by some obscure principle of selection, only give that opportunity to some extras? Good question. But considering that question, you must also bear in mind that Miranda took the initiative to approach the screenwriter, director, and the two actors. So now I conclude this parable with more narration from the perspective of the teller of the parable, myself. And as I complete the parable, I describe to you, because the power of narration is a descriptive power, what happens that evening at dinner. The actor and the actresses take a real liking to Miranda. She does have star quality. She's bright. She's tough. She has the makings of someone who could be involved in filmmaking. And so they warm to each other and Miranda warms to them. And during the course of the evening, Miranda exchanges glances with the screenwriter-director. Well, he's somewhat of an older man. He's quite a bit older, actually. You know, the actors are in their late 40s. Can't tell. The female actress could be 55, but she looks 10, 15 years younger. You know, movie magic. But the director is definitely a man of more age, more experience. A lot older than Miranda. And yet, well, these things do happen in the magical ambience of filmmaking. There appears to be a kind of attraction between Miranda and the screenwriter. obviously there's an attraction, a physical attraction. Well, by this time, Miranda's mind is kind of racing into various directions. One thing she's thinking is, where do I go from here? And I love this story, and I want to hear more about it, and I want to be part of this story. And I don't know if I'm up to this or not, because I'm a very young, immature girl, and how could I possibly get into complicity with these sophisticated and accomplished people? And so her mind is kind of racing, and she's looking at the director now and then and exchanging a few words with him, and she's thinking, wow, what's happening here? Am I going to end up on my back on the director's couch, like the story goes in Hollywood legend? You know, maybe that wouldn't be such a bad thing, you know, who knows? And she thinks of a movie she actually saw once called The Stuntman. And The Stuntman, in a way, sort of echoes the experience that she's going through. And the heroine in The Stuntman makes that point, that the way that girls get into movies is by getting on their back on the director's couch. So, but Miranda's an autonomous girl at her age. She's handles sex pretty fine. She can handle men. So if that were to be in the cards, that's a possibility floating in the air as they have dinner that evening. And then as they finish dinner and they're sitting there drinking some wine, the two actors fall silent. And the director speaks to Miranda as they watch and listen, and they carefully gauge her reaction. And the director tells Miranda something that she didn't see coming at all. He says, I think I can speak for my friends here, stars in my film, and I'm delighted to meet you. And we're really thrilled that you came to talk to us. You're not an ordinary extra. And you have an opportunity because you took the initiative to come and talk to us to know something that no extra can ever know. And I'm going to tell you what that is right now. You see, I'm the auteur. I write and direct this film. Now, I write it in close collaboration with my two friends here, the stars, but I am principally the screenwriter. And what only we know, the two stars and myself, that is for you to know now. Because you had the courage and the audacity to come to us. And because you picked up on the dialogue. And because you are compelled to be involved in this story. And because of all that, I can tell you that the movie we're filming is not completely written. When I wrote this screenplay in close collaboration with the stars, we all decided that we would leave it open and that the final scenes and the final outcome of the screenplay would only be revealed in the process of shooting the film. So there is an improvisational element in this screenplay, in this story, the Gnostic Love Triangle. And you yourself, Miranda, you're the proof of this improvisational element. But what we want to know, and he nods to his two friends, is this. Can you uphold that role to be the proof? Or are you just going to fade away into being an ordinary extra? And Miranda is like, kind of intimidated by this and at the same time extremely excited. And the director sees this and he smiles at her gently and he says, this is how it works. I have left a place in the plot of this film. I have left scenes open in the remaining half of this film after the crucial dialogue at the corner cafe. And I have constructed the film in such a way that were an extra such as yourself to show interest in the plot of the film, then the subsequent scenes would include the extra as an actor in the film. So I am inviting you, Miranda, to become an actor in this film. You will sit with myself and the two stars. We will go over the concluding half of the film. And now that you have appeared and by your own initiative shown your passion and fascination for this story, shown the desire to be in this story, I'll put you in the story. And you can have a role in subsequent scenes. And so the way I rewrite the movie, thanks to you, Miranda, is that you only appear as an incidental character in the scene in the cafe. But at some subsequent or later scene, not too much later, 2 or 3 minutes later in screen time, you appear again. Oh, it's that striking girl with the tattoo on her right arm who is in the cafe. I thought she was just a client, a customer in the cafe that had nothing to do with the story. No, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold the camera. Now it turns out that this girl is not only an actor in the story, but she can be a star as well. And she can determine the outcome of that story. So this is what the director tells Miranda at the end of the dinner of the four of them in the best hotel in town. So in short, the director, with the complicity of the two stars, invites Miranda, the extra, to collaborate with them on this film. And Miranda's a pretty smart girl, so she is able to comprehend, although it's big, it's, well, let's face it, it's pretty awesome to have an opportunity like this. She gets her mind around it, and she realizes what is being asked of her. Not only to be involved in playing the scenes and shooting the film in close complicity with the creators, but to actually be involved in the story that the film tells. Miranda, out of her own mind, comes to that realization. And as they leave dinner that evening, they're lingering on the lounge of the, in the lounge of the hotel. Miranda says goodbye to the female actress, touches her, the friendly gesture on the shoulder, and says, "You know, Miranda, there's a code in our business. There's a code of narration, you can call it. You're going to go home now, back to your house and back to your ordinary life, the life where you live as an extra all the time. You're an extra in your own life. And it's for you to choose if you want to uphold the opportunity given to you or not. So go take some time, take some space, and think about it. But if you do choose that, let me give you some advice as an actress and creator of this film. You can only go back to your ordinary life for visits. You can only go home and go back to the world of extras for brief visits. Your life, according to the code of narration, must be in the story where you act and not in the world where you are merely an extra. And that is your choice to make now. We would love to see you again, Miranda, but we realize that there's nothing that compels you. You're under no obligation to uphold the opportunity you've been given. But I ask you, young woman, that if you do uphold it, to realize that you must uphold it entirely. You must be all in and then some. There is no half-hearted way to act in this movie, because the story of this movie is the story of another life. And with that advice, female actress bids good evening to Miranda, and she wanders home through the streets, whether they be the streets of Santa Fe, in the high mountain desert of the United States, or along the boardwalk in Penzance in Cornwall, England, a lovely seaside town, or in 100,000 other locations where you could picture this parable to take place. And she considers what everyone must consider who has the opportunity that life brings to her. Either to uphold that opportunity and face the obligations and responsibilities to be in the movie and in the story, or to let it fade out. That's a directorial term in screenwriting. At the end of the movie, they used to write, "Fade out. The end." And so I conclude the parable of the extras.